Oppenheimer was now a member in good standing of the American establishment. His credentials included the chairmanship of the AEC's General Advisory Committee, a coveted Q, Atomic Secrets, security clearance, the presidency of the American Physical Society, and a member of Harvard University's Board of Overseers. As a Harvard overseer, Oppenheimer rubbed shoulders with such influential men as the poet Archibald MacLeish, Judge Charles Wysansky Jr., and Joseph Alsop. On a warm, sunny day in early June 1947, Harvard awarded Oppenheimer an honorary degree. During the graduation ceremonies, he listened as his friend General George C. Marshall unveiled the Truman administration's plan to pour billions of dollars into a program for European economic recovery, what soon became known as the Marshall Plan. Oppenheimer and MacLeish grew particularly close. The poet took to sending him sonnets, and they corresponded frequently. He and Robert shared similar liberal values, values that they had come to believe were equally threatened by the communists on the left and the radicals on the right. In August 1949, MacLeish published an astonishingly bitter essay in the Atlantic Monthly, The Conquest of America, in which he attacked the country's post-war descent into an atmosphere of dystopia, of a utopia gone awry. Although America was the most powerful nation on the globe, the American people seemed seized by a mad compulsion to define themselves by the Soviet threat. In this sense, MacLeish wryly concluded, America had been conquered by the Soviets, who were now dictating American behavior. "Whatever the Russians did, we did in reverse," MacLeish wrote. He harshly criticized Soviet tyranny, but lamented the fact that so many Americans were willing to sacrifice their civil liberties in the name of anti-communism. MacLeish asked Oppenheimer what he thought of the essay. Robert's reply revealed the evolution of his own political views. He thought MacLeish's description of the present state of affairs was masterful. But he was troubled by MacLeish's prescription, a call for a redeclaration of the revolution of the individual. This familiar exhortation to Jeffersonian individualism seemed somehow inadequate and not very fresh. "Man is both an end and an instrument," Oppenheimer wrote. He reminded MacLeish of the profound part that culture and society play in the very definition of human values, human salvation and liberation. "Therefore, I think that what is needed is something far subtler than the emancipation of the individual from society. It involves, with an awareness that the past 150 years have rendered progressively more acute, the basic dependence of man on his fellows." Robert then told MacLeish of his midnight walk in the snow with Niels Bohr earlier that year, in which the Dane had expounded his philosophy of openness and complementarity. Bohr, he thought, provides that new insight into the relations of the individual and society without which we can give an effective answer neither to communists, nor to the antiquarians, nor to our own confusions. MacLeish welcomed Robert's letter. "It was extraordinarily kind of you to write me at such length. The point you raise is, of course, the central point of the whole business." Some of his friends on the left were not quite sure what to make of this transformation. But those who had all along thought of Oppenheimer as a popular front Democrat had no reason to think his political spots had changed. Rather, the issues had changed. With the war against fascism won, except in Franco's Spain, and the Depression over, the Communist Party was simply no longer the magnet it had once been for politically active intellectuals. To his non-communist liberal friends like Robert Wilson, Hans Bethe, and I.I. Rabi, Oppie was the same man with the same motivations. Significantly, Frank Oppenheimer's transformation was less abrupt. While no longer a communist, he did not think the Russians really threatened America. On this issue, the two brothers had some of their most serious political arguments. Robert told his brother that he believed the Russians were ready to march if they were given the opportunity. He favored Truman's hard line against the Soviets now, and when Frank tried to argue with him, Robert would say that he knew things that he couldn't report, but they convinced him that the Russians could not be expected to cooperate. In their first reunion after the war, Hoken Chevalier also noted the change in Oppie's outlook. Sometime in May 1946, Oppie and Kitty visited the Chevaliers in their new oceanfront home at Stinson Beach. Oppie made it clear that his political sympathies had moved, at least in Hoken's view, considerably to the right. Chevalier recalled being shocked at some of the very uncomplimentary things he had to say about the American Communist Party and the Soviet Union. "Hokin," Oppie said, "Hokin, believe me, I am serious. I have real reason to believe, and I cannot tell you why, but I assure you I have real reason to change my mind about Russia. They are not what you believe them to be. You must not continue your trust, your blind faith, in the policies of the USSR." Moreover, Chevalier continued to hear things about his old friend that confirmed his observation. One evening in New York, Chevalier ran into Phil Morrison on the street, and they talked about all that had happened since the outbreak of the war. Chevalier regarded Morrison as a former comrade, but he also knew Morrison as one of Oppie's closest friends before the war, and as one of the key physicists who had followed him to Los Alamos. "What about Upya?" Chevalier asked. "I hardly see him anymore," Morrison replied. "We no longer speak the same language. He moves in a different circle." Morrison then related how he and Oppenheimer had been talking one day, and Oppie kept referring to George. Finally, Morrison had interrupted to ask who this George was. "You understand," Morrison said to Chevalier, "General George C. Marshall to me is General Marshall, or the Secretary of State, not George. This is typical." "Oppenheimer had changed," Morrison said. "He thinks he's God."